Welcome to TanakhStudy.com. I'm Nachliel Selivan, and together we are studying archaeology on the parasha. Our special topic and special episode for Rosh Hashanah is the shofar, the ram's horn in archaeology. The holidays are upon us, Yamim Noraim, the days of awe. There is a minhag, a custom to blow the shofar on every day beginning on Rosh Chodesh Elul, whether it is during Silichot or after prayer in the morning. We have been preparing for the special mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, pretty much the only mitzvah, aside from the special offerings, which is to hear the shofar, to blast the shofar. And that is why it is actually called Yom Teruah, a day of blasting the shofar. In spirit of the Rambam in Hilchot Teshuvah Perigimel Halacha Dalet, who says, Af al pi shetikiat shofar b'Rosh Hashanah gezerat hakatuv, remez yesh bo, kelomar, Uru yeshenim mishenatchem, v'nirdamim hakitzu mitardematchem, v'chapsu b'maasechem, v'chizru b'tshuva, v'zichru b'ra'achem. Eilu ha'shochachim et ha'emet behavle hazman, v'shogim kol shnatam behevel v'rik asher lo yatzil. Habitu lenafshotechem, v'hetivu darchechem u'ma'alelechem, v'yazov kol echad mikem darko ha'ra'a u'machashavto asher lo tova. Says the Rambam, basically, although there are undoubtedly many meanings and associations with the shofar, the simple ram's horn, at the end of the day, is a mitzvah. And that's it. However, says Rambam, it also has intrinsic meaning, which is, wake up! Why else would it mean when you hear the blasting sound of the horn, or a trumpet, or an air raid siren, for that matter? In the spirit of this waking up, I would like to discuss the shofar and the trumpets, the hatotzot, in archaeology. The trumpets and the shofar come hand in hand, as we say in Tehilim Tzadikhet Pasuk Vav, b'hatotzot v'kol shofar hari'u lifnei ha'melech Hashem, with trumpets and the blast of the horn, raise shouts before the king Hashem. So let's start with the trumpets and then go to the shofar. Well, back in Be'alot Echa, where we discussed the traveling of the machanot, of the camp, we learned all about how to make the trumpets, Aseh lecha shtei chatzotzot kesef, and I want to consider one thing. I want you to think about this as we go through these pesukim. What examples of trumpets would Bnei Yisrael have seen coming out of the largest and most prominent civilization of the time, Egypt? How would they have been manufactured, those trumpets, and what would they have been used for? So, let's go. We are in Bamidbar Perek Yud, reading and skipping about between pesukim Aleph and Yud. וידבר השם משה לאמור, עשה לך שתי חצוצרות כסף, מקשה תעשה אותם, והיו לך למקרא העדה, ולמסע את המחנות, ותקעו בהן ונועדו אליך כל העדה אל פתח אוהל מועד. ואם באחת תתקעו ונועדו אליך נשיאים ראשי אלפי ישראל. So there's a system that basically tells you what to do and how to blow the shofar. And it says, have these two trumpets made from hammered work of silver. They shall serve you to summon the community and set the divisions in motion, which is the machaneh. And when both are blown in long blasts, the whole community shall assemble before you at the entrance to Oel Moed. But if it's only one blast, then only the Nesi'im, the chieftains, head of Israel's contingents, shall assemble before you. And I'm moving, skipping ahead a little bit. ובני אהרון הכהנים יתקעו בחצוצרות, והיו לכם לחוקת עולם לדורתם. So it's the כהנים who are the ones responsible for blowing the חצוצרות. וכי תבואו מלחמה בארצכם על הצר הצורר אתכם, והראותם החצוצרות, ונזכרתם לפני השם אלוהיכם, ונושעתם אויביכם. All the trumpets shall be blown by Aaron's sons, as we said, and when you are in war and in your lands against an aggressor who attacks you, you shall sound the short blasts on the trumpets, that you may be remembered before Hashem, your Lord, and be delivered from your enemies. וביום שמחתכם ובמועדיכם ובראשי חודשיכם, ותקעתם החצוצרות על עולותיכם ועל זבחי שלמיכם, והיו לכם לזיכרון לפני אלוהיכם, אני השם אלוהיכם. On your joyous occasions, your fixed festivals and the new moon days, Rosh Chodesh, you shall sound the trumpets over your burnt offerings and your sacrifices of well-being, and they shall be a zikaron, a reminder for you before Hashem your Lord, which is a very interesting connection back to Rosh Hashanah. So we see several different uses for the trumpets. They can be used for coordinating the movements of a larger encampment, which is reminiscent of the Roman army, which needed trumpets to signal how to move about. Remember, this is before the NFL's sophisticated communications built into your helmet. And it's also used as battle cries in the context of Ta'anit and fasting for the plague and so on, which is discussed in great length in Rambam's Ilchot Ta'anit and in the Mishnah and so on. And finally, which is relevant to us for the upcoming holidays, it is on V'yom Simchatchem uve'mo'adechem, on joyous occasions, you blow the trumpets. Now, the earliest known trumpets in existence to date are from, would you like to guess? Ancient Egypt, of course. And we're talking about King Tut, Tutankhamun's trumpets. Tutankhamun's trumpets are a pair of trumpets found in the burial chamber of the 18th dynasty pharaoh Tutankhamun, and these trumpets, one of sterling silver and one of bronze or copper, some of the material just wasn't really analyzed yet. It's a very expensive and dangerous, in other words, you might destroy the chatzotzot by doing that, which is why they didn't do it. But anyway, bronze is an alloy made with copper and tin, so it's basically looks like copper. And they're constructed, and they're considered to be the oldest operational trumpets in the world, and the only known surviving examples from ancient Egypt. Now, we have established that Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus, took place either in the 18th or later in the 19th dynasty. And while we are not going to weigh in on that discussion here, this is either contemporary or within a couple hundred years from our presence in Egypt, and definitely something we would have known about. I mean, we'll tie this in a moment. So the trumpets were found in 1922 by Howard Carter during the excavation of Tutankhamun's tomb. And similar-looking trumpets featured in Egyptian wall paintings that are usually, though not always, associated with military scenes. So you can imagine the hot pursuit of Bnei Yisrael leaving Egypt with such trumpets and the impact that it would have made on us. But these trumpets have been silent for over 3,000 years. And yet these trumpets were sounded before a live audience of an estimated 150 million listeners through an international BBC broadcast aired on the 16th of April, 1939. The trumpets were played by a bandsman, James Tappern, of Prince Albert's own 11th Royal Hussars Regiment. The recording was recently featured and can be heard in the BBC's Radio 4 program, Ghost Music. So just imagine right now in the current King Tut exhibit, which was, if it wasn't for Corona, which is supposed to be traveling in different parts of the world until 2023, and then finally residing and never to leave again, the new Cairo Museum, which is being built, they actually have a recording of it so you can hear it. Rex Keating, who presented the 1939 broadcast, later claimed that during a rehearsal, the silver trumpet shattered, and Alfred Lucas, a member of Carter's team who had restored the finds, was so distressed he needed to go to the hospital. Due to their fragility, it is unlikely the trumpets will be played ever again by any official musical reconstruction. And just to get into the more juicy current events, the bronze trumpet was among items stolen from the Egyptian Museum in Cairo during the Egyptian looting and riots of 2011. Mysteriously returned to the museum some weeks later. According to Al-Ahram, after its return to Halach Hassan, curator of the Tutankhamun collection at the Egyptian Museum, claimed that it had quote-unquote magical powers and that, quote, whenever someone blows into it, a war occurs. A week before the revolution, during a documenting and photographing process, one of the museum's staff had blown into it, and a week after, revolution broke out. The same thing happened before the 1967 war and prior to the 1991 Gulf War, when a student was doing a comprehensive research on Tutankhamun's collection. End of quote. That's kind of cool. So everybody has got their spooky stories. Now, this is clearly a cool story, and the reason I'm bringing it is, again, to demonstrate the known usage and manufacturing of the trumpets at the time of the mitzvah was given. Now that that's been established, let's jump ahead into some Jewish archaeology and iconography. So shortly after the Six-Day War, which you just mentioned, 1967, Professor Binyamin Mazal of the Hebrew University led an excavation team in the Ofel, or the southwestern corner of the Temple Mount, which you see immediately to your right when you come in Shaar HaShbot, the Dung Gate, towards the Kotel. And during the excavations, the team discovered a large stone which has Hebrew carving on it reading Lebet HaTekiah Lehach or Lehav, and it's not quite clear. It is either completed as Lehavdil, to separate, or Lehachriz, to announce. And there are other possibilities, but these are the two most plausible reconstructions of what it said. But it definitely says Bet HaTekiah. Now, based on what we have learned, that the Kohanim are the ones who blow the trumpets, and sources from Chazal and also from Josephus, we know that there was a place on the Temple Mount where Kohanim stood to blow a trumpet, for example, on Fridays, to alert the farmers and shopkeepers and citizens of the coming Shabbat. So we found remnants from the second Beit HaMikdash in Jerusalem, which indicate the importance of the Chatzotzot. The imagery of two silver chatzotzot have also been shown on the Arch of Titus alongside the menorah, and also on the coins of the Bar Kokhba revolt, which incidentally were silver coins. But the point is that there are two chatzotzot which link us back to the Beit HaMikdash. And you can see the Beit HaTekiah inscription as well as these coins in the Israel Museum. And there's a reconstruction of the replica that is, of the Beit HaTikvah inscription in its original location where it was found in the Ofel, which you can go and visit on your free time. Now, it's right by the Kotel. Now, let's get into the Shofar. This actually opens up a Pandora's box, which I will only hint at because it's worth whetting your appetite, and then I'll get into the Shofar. So, you're a detective, and you have discovered some ancient artifact with symbols on it, and it can be a manuscript, a book, a decorative item, a private or public use. Is there any way to tell if it is Jewish? Are there particular symbols which you would immediately know are Jewish? What is perhaps the most identifiable Jewish symbol today? Undoubtedly, the six-pointed star known as the Magen David, the Star of David. As an MA student in ancient Jewish history, the most obvious flaw in this argument is the question of, well, when is it from? Because the six-pointed star was a popular Muslim geometric decoration as well. In fact, we found, and we means my family, found bronze Muslim coins from under our house in the Old City, and it has a six-pointed star in the middle. And yet, there are 15th century Spanish synagogues with a six-pointed star, and the Magen David is, obviously the words Magen David are very, very ancient. We have them in the Pesukim, and there's a discussion of what exactly did David have. And then there's that symbol of the six-pointed star. There's also the five-pointed star called the Chotam Shlomo, which show up in Jewish mysticism. But how far back is it considered to be a Jewish symbol? There's, in fact, an entire book about this called Sipuro Shel Semel, the story of a symbol. It doesn't go as far back as you'd think. The oldest known Jewish symbol, quote-unquote, and by that I mean an image which tells you that it is associated with Jews, is the menorah, the seven-branched menorah, which had been found etched on the catacombs of Beit She'arim from the time of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and decorates more artifacts that we can list here. Just a few examples. Synagogues meaning synagogue floors, walls, columns, decorations, anywhere you can think of, it's carved into synagogues, it's mosaics, it's on funerary glass vessels from the late Roman and Byzantine period, it's on amulets and jewelry. So there's a lot of menorot. Now, back to our detective work. So throughout history, it was the synagogue, the Mikdash Me'at, the diminished sanctuary, where Jews convened to express their yearnings for the rebuilding of Yerushalayim and the restoration of its temple service. These yearnings were expressed in liturgy, in piyut and in prayer, in tefillah, and in the synagogue's decorative iconography, the icons, the images used. There are a number of Jewish symbols which tend to be found together. A seven-branched menorah, lulav, etrog, shofar, and machta, the incense shovel. The common denominator of all of the above symbols is undoubtedly their association with the temple service. The seven-branched menorah is the most obvious one, since it endured until today, but the others had significance in the post-destruction years. Some of Yavne's enactments, Takanot Yavne, were focused specifically on the usage of the lulav and the shofar in such a way that they will remind us of their usage in the Beit HaMikdash, and that's the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah Perek Dalet, but also the incense shovel was part of the daily service, as Mishnah and Tamid mentions, and so on and so forth. It is worth noting, by the way, that Samaritans used most of these icons that Jews use in synagogues and iconography and decorative items and so on, with the exception of the lulav and etrog, as their usage is derived through Torah Sheba'al Peh, through rabbinic ruling, which is kind of cool if you're a detective. And this is something, it's always useful to know this when trying to identify Samaritan objects, but the shofar was obviously connected to the Beit HaMikdash. Now, for us anyway, they didn't really, anyway, but they also use the shofar, it's in the Torah. Anyway, so when we think about the shofar, it's connected not only with the Yom Teruah, but the shofar also, other than Din, it's also associated with the ram of Akedat Yitzchak. It is about awakening. And throughout Jewish history, from the post-destruction years and until very recently, the shofar was one of the most prominent Jewish icons alongside the menorah and the lulav, which we still relate to, and the machta, the shovel, which we somehow sort of lost touch with. But there was a time in which just seeing those images reminded us of what we had lost and what we were praying to rebuild. And on that note, if ever there was a time where the shofar called for awakening, Elu ha-shochachim et ha-emet behavle ha-zeman, v'shogim kol shenatam behevel v'rega asher lo yatzil, as the Rambam says, we are in unprecedented times, definitely in historic times. Just think about how the health restrictions of the coronavirus are forcing us to reimagine and reconsider the structure of social and communal gatherings, of prayer, of learning, and more. What are we really trying to do? What should we be trying to do? Should we be trying to recreate the replacement of the Beit HaMikdash with all of its centuries of add-ons? Or to reconstruct our same old attitudes towards who we are as a people, as a community? Or what do we do in the synagogue, in the shul when we gather? These are questions that we are all asking ourselves today, more than ever, in this period of waking up. I would like to wish you all a Shana Tova, a Happy New Jewish Year, and I'm looking forward to completing this Parasha Plus podcast with you next year. Shana Tova u'metuka.